a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate Commerce and Energy is called to order on time for a change for the first time of the year of this session. And I'd like to greet everyone listening on the internet and thank everyone for showing up today. I'd also like, we have a page who has a very wonderful belt buckle. If you would like to come up and say your name and where you're from and any future plans, just press the red button. Okay.
My name's Corwin Coldman. I'm from Montrose, and I'm going to attend the Naval Academy this summer.
Oh, congratulations. Very nice. Reminder to everyone here, please turn off your cell phones. And with that, the secretary, please call the roll. Oh, and the chair will note Senator Buell is excused today. She has arranged that with me, so she will not be in committee today. So, with that, secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Here.
Buell's excused. Jensen?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Maher?
I am here.
Lederman?
Here.
Holine?
Here.
Six. There is a quorum.
Quorum is present. With that, the chair will entertain a motion of approval of the minutes of the last meeting. Moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. Motion carried. Please sign in if you're going to testify on any bill. And with that, we are going to slightly change the order of the bills today. We are going to move Senate Bill 32 to the top. Senate Bill 32 is an act to revise the provisions under which the Bureau of Administration may enter into contracts for insurance and reinsurance. Any proponents to testify, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of... Jeff Holden, I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Bureau of Administration. Appreciate your courtesy in moving me up to the top here today. Senate Bill 32 will clean up an obsolete reference and refers to Chapter 523. That's found in SDCL 322-5. Chapter 523 was the old state purchasing law that was repealed in 2010. We discovered that this was still in here this summer when we were reviewing our statutes. Chapter 523 was replaced with Chapters 518A and 518D that relate to state government purchases. So what we're doing with this bill is simply putting in the correct reference in the statute. So I appreciate your support. If Senate Bill 32 will answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents to testify? Seeing none, we'll close and open up for opponent testimony. Any opponents to Senate Bill 32? Hearing none, we'll close testimony. Any questions from the committee? Hearing none, we'll close questions and move to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Maher.
Move due pass on Senate Bill 32.
Motion is due pass, moved by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Lederman. Any discussion upon that, Senator Maher? None. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Holine?
Aye.
There is a six.
Unanimous vote in favor of Senate Bill 32. Senator Bogalka.
I move consent. Second.
Motion of consent moved by Senator Bogalka, seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Senate Bill 32, due pass, is placed on the consent calendar. Thank you very much. With that, we'll move to Senate Bill 85. Do we have a page? The chair will ask for a little leniency. I'm wondering if the Senate Prime is planning to come.
Yeah, indicated to be at least as a half hour.
I've
heard my name.
I can pitch it.
But I think Senator also wanted to.
The Chair will put everyone at ease for just a few minutes while we just figure this out. For those of you listening, wondering what's going on. If actually, yeah, we can move. Sorry, to explain for those of you who happen to be listening, we're trying to find the Senate prime sponsor on the next two bills, Senate 85 and 89, and he's on his way. But with that, we have the House prime sponsor, and we will let my district mate from Watertown come up and give her pitch. You're in the big show now, Melissa.
Yeah. Can we turn this mic on, or is it?
It's live.
Oh, it's live. Well, this was sort of off the cuff. Melissa Magstead, District 5, House of Representatives. I am bringing before you Senate Bill 85, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the production incentive payment available to ethanol producers. And now I'm going to pass it on to the next people to speak on this bill. Oh, goodness sake.
Compelling testimony, Representative.
I know. Isn't it motivating?
Look, any further proponents on Senate Bill 85? I will talk very slowly. we'll stand at ease for again another minute. Sorry for the confusion. Okay. Sorry, Mr. Leader, we just made fast progress, and we are on Senate Bill 85, which I'm not sure if I said that, but it's Senate Bill 85, an act to revise certain provisions regarding the production incentive payment available to ethanol producers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I apologize for being tardy. I didn't realize that you were that efficient and that fast, so I thought I had one more minute, so I apologize. My name is Russell Olson. I'm District 8 State Senator from Madison. And today I'd ask for your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 85, which changes or deletes the requirements that alcohol be denatured to qualify for product credit payment. The reason for the legislation is that our ethanol plants in South Dakota started to export to Brazil, Saudi Arabia, and Europe. Different export markets have different purity requirements for the alcohol that they import. Most will not allow the alcohol to be denatured, made unfit to drink as we do in South Dakota, and require the products be pure. In South Dakota Codified Law 1047B-162 was enacted in 1995 when federal law required all alcohol production that was not intended and licensed for human consumption to be denatured and made the product credit contingent upon the alcohol being denatured. At that time, no one had any idea that the industry would actually be exporting ethanol. Federal law now authorizes properly licensed plants to ship and export pure alcohol. However, our state law will not allow the production credit to be paid for the alcohol. What we had is one of our plants in South Dakota, as part of an annual review by the Department of Revenue, they came in and as part of their audit found that the plant was exporting to, I believe in this case it was Brazil, and the government down there doesn't allow us to denature or to make it unfit for human consumption. So the plant in question in South Dakota actually lost out for that production credit because for that portion, not for the entire export. The big picture thing is here, folks, is that, you know, our ethanol plants in South Dakota last year produced 1 billion gallons of ethanol. And at an average price of $2.20, that's $2.2 billion, or 10% of the total agricultural impact on the state. And what we're saying here is that nobody, this isn't going to be on the History Channel and Moonshiners or anything like that. We're not looking to make this a food or a potable product. This is just trying to comply and compete in a global environment, and so we're asking for your favorable consideration of Senate Bill 85. I believe that I have other folks that are going to testify as proponents that can get into any technical questions that you may have on this, but I'll stand by for questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Any further proponents on Senate Bill 85?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Harry Christensen. I'm an attorney from Rapid City. I represent the South Dakota Ethanol Producers Association, which is a conglomerate of, I think we have 11 members of the total 14 plants that are producing in South Dakota. I think the senator will well explain this, and if you have specific questions relating to the any of the federal regulations that are required or any of our state laws that are involved in it, I'll just stand by to answer it. I think the bill is pretty simple on its face, and it achieves what we are attempting to do, is allowing us to export unadulterated alcohol into the international market, which back in 1996, I was involved with, we had no idea that would ever occur. We had no idea we'd ever be exporting to Brazil, or for of all places.
Thank you. Any further proponents on Senate Bill 85? Any further proponents? Hearing none, we'll ask for opponent testimony on Senate Bill 85. Any opponents? Hearing none, we'll close testimony and open up for questions from the committee.
Sure.
Senator Johnston.
Mr. Christensen. Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Mr. Christensen, what's the opportunity? This is something that wasn't envisioned 17 years ago, but now, you know, we're taking a legislative action to allow broader leniency, and how much more production does your members believe that they can get to get into the international market?
Mr. Chairman, the international market for ethanol is just at its very, very infancy. They actually import, or I think it was one of the plants exported to Saudi Arabia, a significant quantity last year. The other markets that they're developing are Europe. And the Brazil thing has always intrigued me, because Brazil is one of the first nations that had a requirement that alcohol be used in other motor vehicles, and they make alcohol through sugarcane, which is one step closer to alcohol than when we take corn or stover and convert it. But they had a sugarcane crop failure, and as a result, they ended up importing our ethanol. The market, in many places, it's not used as an extender of fuel, but rather as an oxygenate to achieve air quality standards. And so as they phase out the other chemicals they were using and made illegal in their gasoline to improve air quality, that market will increase. Right now, it's not a panacea for the production of ethanol. It's just another market, another place to sell it. And what this law basically does, it just catches up with what the federal regulations have changed since 1996. Right now, the most important thing on the agenda for the ethanol industry in South Dakota and elsewhere is the RFS. And the introduction of E15 as an acceptable motor fuel throughout the nation. Because right now we're producing about as much ethanol as we can use. We've hit a blend wall. So.
Follow up? Any further questions from the committee? Any further questions? Hearing none, we will close for questions and move to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jensen.
Move to pass Senate Bill 85.
Motion of due pass on Senate Bill 85, moved by Senator Jensen, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Legalka?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Colleen?
Aye.
It is unanimous.
6-0 vote in favor of due pass on Senate Bill 85.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Maher.
Move consent.
Motion of consent moved by Senator Maher. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Bagalka. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Just a voice vote. So all those in favor of consent on Senate Bill 85 say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? So, we were forcing Senator Olson to speak on the floor. Yes. But Senate Bill 85 is moved to Senate floor with a motion of, with a recommendation of due pass. Next on the agenda is Senate Bill 89, which is an act to limit the liability of retail dealers in petroleum products under certain conditions. Welcome back, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, again, my name is Russell Olson, District 8 State Senator from Madison. And today I'd like you to have a favorable consideration for Senate Bill 89. Senate Bill 89 insulates retail petroleum dealers from liability if the customer puts the wrong fuel into a vehicle. The best anecdotal way to explain this is if, and this has happened to several of my friends, you go into a gas station and put diesel fuel into a regular automobile. The diesel fuel is clearly marked, and for most of them they have a green hose and green handle or whatever, and it says diesel fuel. But in haste or in cold weather, you're in a big hurry, and boom, you put the diesel fuel in and get a mile down the road, and your vehicle isn't working quite so well. It isn't the owner of the gas station's fault that you put diesel fuel into the vehicle. It was clearly marked, and it was clearly labeled, and therefore there is no liability on the gas station owner. What we're asking you to do here is the same thing along the lines of E85, and where as some of if I had my druthers and I could have an old 1963 Ford Mustang and pulled in and I saw that it was clearly labeled E85 and put it into that vehicle and again had engine problems, that's my fault. The bad is on me as the consumer for not paying attention to what I wanted to put into that fuel or what fuel I was putting into the engine. It's extremely important for us to have this liability removed from the retail dealers as we see more and more ethanol sold in South Dakota. I think that this bill makes total sense on, you know, almost the buyer beware. Another incident. We're also not letting the retailer off the hook. If you have a full service station, you pull in and you say, I want premium fuel into my vehicle and don't put any of that ethanol in there, and the attendant that works for the retailer puts in E85, they're liable if you have engine problems. And so, you know, we're not looking to let them off the hook if they have anything to do with it or if they mislabeled or didn't properly mark it. But if they're properly marked and labeled correctly, we're asking for what we believe is a reasonable expectation of a lack of liability on the retailer's part. And again, I will stand by for questions and would appreciate your support on Senate Bill 89.
Thank you, Senator Olson. It's amazing that our page is actually the belt buckle that I referred to is the seatbelt of a Ford Mustang that was referred to. So it's the dream car of this chairman. And with that, we'll welcome any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 89. Welcome back to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Harry Christensen, South Dakota Ethanol Producers Association. This might be a historic moment. The American Petroleum Institute, the Petroleum Marketing Council, all are in support of this bill. Basically, what the senator said is exactly what the bill does. It puts the onus on the consumer, assuming that the pumps are labeled correctly,
that there is no adulteration of the fuel, it meets the normal standards, then if you pump the wrong fuel into your car by yourself, then you are responsible for it. I've been practicing law in South Dakota for almost 40 years, and I've never heard of a lawsuit brought for this. Doesn't mean there hasn't been one, but I've not heard of one. But the significance where this becomes really critical is when we transition to E15. There's always a psychological barrier that you have to break when you change a fuel. And the argument that's made to prevent its use is, well, I don't want to be sued. And it's a legitimate concern. I mean, anybody can file a lawsuit. By removing that psychological barrier, we then will be able to have an easier time transitioning that fuel when everything is resolved with it into the market. And so this is really a long-term solution. And as I said, if it's improperly labeled, if it's adulterated fuel in one form or another, this doesn't excuse the liability for that type of behavior. It also does not excuse liability if the gas jockey puts in the wrong gas into your tank, even though you've asked him to do something differently. I think it's just a common sense bill. So I'll stand by for any questions, but I think it's pretty self-explanatory. And I believe Donna Litke from Petroleum Marketing Association has some comments as well.
Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 89?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Donna Litke, Executive Director and Lobbyist for the South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association, and I am the gas station guys. We do stand in support of this bill. Mr. Christensen might have mentioned that Iowa actually passed this bill last year, and I think he had a couple points I'd just like to reiterate, and he ended kind of with talking about E15. And a challenge in our industry has been that E15 is at present only recommended for certain motor vehicle years. So when a gas station sells that, it's confusing if they let a consumer that has a 2001 vehicle put that in. By the letter of the law, that's illegal. And so that is a confusion, and so they do kind of resist putting that product into their slate of products that are offered. You might be wondering to yourself, are there really full-service gas stations still in South Dakota? There's about five of them. One is here in Pierce, South Dakota. And this does not absolve those guys from misfueling you with the wrong type of fuel. Senator Olson talked a little bit about diesel fuel, and we can all kind of chuckle about that. It does have a green nozzle on it. The hose is actually, or the nozzle is actually a different size than a regular gas hose, and you can't imagine how many times that happens and how many times they come back screaming and saying, you put the wrong fuel in, or what did I put in my car? So that all that confusion does help. This bill does relieve the liability for retail marketers from all those situations. I think it's a great bill. I think as time goes forward, you do see myself and the ethanol guys walking hand in hand and agreeing on bills. We market the product that they produce, and it's a great product, and it comes out of South Dakota, and we should all be supportive of that. I'm just going to add with one other comment, and Mr. Chairman, if you would allow me a leniency for a second, my dream car is a 1964 and a half Mustang convertible, and I was born just a couple weeks before that came onto the market, so great vehicle. Thank you. I'll stand by for questions.
Totally agree. It's got to be the convertible. So, any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 89? Any further proponents? Hearing none, we will ask for any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 89. Any opponents? Hearing none, we will close and open it up for questions from the committee. The chair actually has one for Mrs. Litke. I'll ask it while you're on your way up. You had mentioned that Iowa has passed a similar law last year. Has there been any, do you know what the effect has been?
Mr. Chairman, I do not know the effect that that's had on. I can only contemplate or, I guess, imagine that it's had a good impact on that. I know that Iowa does sell a lot more E15 than South Dakota. Right now, off the top of my head, I can only think of one person that attempted to sell E15. Now, I think they actually pulled that from their product slate because it was so confusing to consumers. They weren't sure of it. There was the year, the model year that's supposed to be, I think it's 2009 to 12, and I could be wrong about that. But there's a certain year, and then they're liable. So it did scare them. Iowa is more proactive on that. I believe that's why they actually passed this bill and why they put it into that into law. But, Mr. Chairman, I could find that out for you and let you know if you would like me to.
Well, I would think that if there were any negative consequences from passing this bill, that it would have come to light. And I just wanted to make sure for anyone listening to the testimony that no negative effect from this law has resulted in a neighboring state. So it seems like a good path to go down for South Dakota as well.
And, Mr. Chairman, I can't imagine this having any negative effect. I look at this as a positive step for all parties involved.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Hearing none, we will open for discussion and or action by the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jensen.
Just for the record, I had a 66 dark blue Mustang, 3-speed, in high school. Love that baby. Hmm.
And where is it now, Senator?
That's a good question. I wish I knew.
Like girlfriends from high school. You just remember it in a certain way. And any further discussion, we will try to end that real quick. Any action by the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lederman. Motion of due pass moved by Senator Lederman. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Johnston. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogolka?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Pauline?
Aye.
Is unanimous. 6.
The vote is unanimous in favor of Senate Bill 89. It will move. Senator Johnston.
Move consent.
Second.
Moved to consent by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Senate Bill 89 is moved to the Senate floor with a motion of consent. Next on the slate, thank you very much. Next on the slate is Senate Bill 57, an act to define biodiesel producer and bulk plant operator and revise certain statutory references and to make certain form and style changes regarding motor fuel taxation. Any proponents?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Deb Hilmer, Director of the Division of Motor Vehicles. As you well know, we were charged with doing red tape review of our some of our statutes, and we selected to look at Chapter 1047B, which has been in existence pretty much as written since 1996. During the review process, we discovered missing definitions, some incorrect citations and cross-references, the use of incorrect words in some places and missing words in others. This bill defines what a bioproducer is, a bulk plant operator, are in sections 1 and 2, and these are definitions that are needed that we're currently missing in the current law. We also had incorrect citations that were located and corrected in sections 3, 13, and 14 of the bill. For example, in section 13, the correct reference was to section 91, not 96. So, again, could have been a typo at the time. We're not really sure, but it was an incorrect reference. The use of incorrect words are corrected in sections 5, 6, 11, 13, and 15. For example, in section 11, we had a bulk plant operator needed a license for a bulk plant, not a terminal site, as stated in the current law. And the correct word in the bill of lading is with no hyphens and thus changes in various sections within the bill. So when you look at the bill, it looks like, what did you really do? But the hyphen doesn't show, and there's not supposed to be a hyphen. So that we changed that. There were missing words are added in section 7, 9, 12, 18, and 19. For example, in section 7, the words operated within the state were added to clarify exactly what terminal operators were to be licensed. We clarified language in sections 5, 6, 8, and 10. For example, the language engaged in the production of ethyl alcohol, biodiesel, and methanol were added to make a uniform definitions throughout. And then finally, unneeded or outdated language was deleted in sections 4, 5, 6, and 16, 17, and 19. For example, notice by telegram was removed in section 16. So it's really kind of some outdated language. I did provide to all of you the speaking points as well as a section by section. So if you wanted to take a look at the section by section, I will not go through it section by section at this time unless that is the desire of the committee. We would appreciate your support on passing Senate Bill 57. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The chair will ask, did you sign in?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I did not have that. Okay. Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 57?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'm back. Donna Lightsky, South Dakota Petroleum and Propane Marketers Association. We do support this bill. We support the changes. I probably am one of the few people that will get up here and admit that I actually read our fuel tax law, and I refer to it on a regular basis. Literally, my first action when I started my job back in April of 95 was the law Ms. Hilmer's talking about just passed, and there was a group that went together and with marketers and their office that actually put together forms. So I did look at this and go, wow, what is this thing? So I do look at that, and I do appreciate their cleanup language, and I think it'll be easier for everybody to find. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further proponents? Any further proponents? Any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 57? Seeing none, we'll open it up for questions from the committee. No questions, so we will open it up for discussion and or action by the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Jensen.
Move to pass Senate Bill 57.
Motion of due pass moved by Senator Jensen, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor will say aye, opposed nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Fogalka?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Six.
Yes, Senator Lederman. Well, actually, sorry. First, I must call. It was a vote of 6-0 in favor of due pass on Senate Bill 57, and it will move to the Senate floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lederman.
Consent.
Motion of consent moved by Senator Lederman, seconded by Senator Maher. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Senate Bill 57 is moved due pass and placed on the consent calendar.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Senator Maher.
We have some guests in the audience. You want to explain what the consent calendar is?
Yes. The consent calendar is a procedure that allows us to accomplish more business at a faster pace. We in a bill like this, which is just basically cleanup and, I mean, let's say bill of lading instead of hyphens between bill slash of slash lading to bill of lading with spaces in between. It's not a contentious bill. It's not a partisan issue. It's just a cleanup of statutory law in South Dakota. And in issues like this, we can place them on the consent calendar, which allows us, once it goes down to the Senate floor, to not have to re-debate the issue and go back over the bill in minutia. Any senator, though, does have a chance of pulling it from the consent calendar, and you have several days to do that. So if any senator does happen to look at that bill and have any question for any reason, it can be pulled and debated upon the Senate floor then. So it's a way of just making it faster for us to accomplish the people's business and move on to the more contentious bills, of which we will probably have one very soon. So, thank you very much, and thank you, Senator Maher, for mentioning that to me. Next on the agenda is Senate Bill 92, an act to provide for the repair of property that has sustained damage when the materials are no longer available in the marketplace. Any proponent testimony on Senate Bill 92?
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Senator Mark Kirkaby from Rapid City. Humbly asking for your consideration to support Senate Bill 92. Nice, short, sweet bill. To be honest with you, I don't see the word contentious anywhere on this bill, but that is my personal opinion. Senate Bill 92 addresses what I think is certainly a need, and certainly I would suggest you support it by the consumers in the great state of South Dakota. multiple insurance carriers do in fact allow this protection, this coverage. There certainly are those that do not. I believe that the comfort and the security, both from a property owner or that consumer, certainly would be supported by the insurance industry. Addressing those replacement type materials that certainly are not currently on the market is specifically what we're looking for. Whether it be that 30-year-old siding that's on a Robbinsdale home in Rapid City, South Dakota, or some unique other exterior materials, to allow that negotiation, to allow that consumer to work with that insurance agency and get that replacement type product and basically allow that shopping or that null and void, this is outdated, we're not going to be allowing that protection or coverage. Well, with that, Ms. Chairman and members of the committee, that is my opening remarks. I do just want to emphasize that we're certainly not out looking for a battle with any insurance carriers, trying to represent and allow that protection for the consumers. And I would welcome any questions at the appropriate time. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kirkaby. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 92?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Dwight Newharth. I'm the executive officer for South Dakota Home Builders Association, and we are in support of Senate Bill 92 for the reasons that the senator outlined. The bill it's not overreaching. It's not trying to do anything that it doesn't say. It's just trying to assure that if a consumer has a house or other building or a structure, that they have the assurance that they're going to get like materials, like quality, like texture, you know, like color. I keep thinking of somebody, you know, if they had a car insured and had a car accident and somebody put on a different colored door or something, I mean, it devalues the property. And we're trying to make sure that a consumer, the value of their property is protected, and nothing more than what sells. There's just a couple handful of states that don't have something similar on their books. South Dakota is one of, I believe, five. And we researched the issue for about a year and found the language that Montana uses and pretty much patterned this bill after that. So I'll stand by for any questions if anyone has any.
Thank you. Any further proponent testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Dean Krogman, I represent the South Dakota Real Estate Realtors Association. I'm testifying on this bill because of, you know, our concern about values. If you could picture yourself looking at a home and there's vinyl siding on it and there was damage 3 years later, you put that siding up against the existing siding and you'll see a definite difference. And then how does that affect the value? If you're looking at a home and there's damage, it has an effect on value. Under the concept of insurance making people whole, that's why you have insurance. I can give you an example of where a circumstance existed where they were willing to give 60 sheets of siding, or we'll pay you this amount. But to make it look right, that ended up being about a third of the total cost. So it does affect values if you can't get the full replacement of the damage that's there. Now, I said damage that's there, but to make it look right, it might mean covering the whole side and not just 60 sheets. So we think this is a legitimate concern, a legitimate request, and would appreciate your support.
Thank you. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 92? Any further proponents? Any opponent testimony on Senate Bill 92?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Dick Thiessen. I'm an attorney here in Pierre, and today I represent State Farm Insurance Companies on Senate Bill 92, which we oppose. I'd like to suggest to you that in picking up where the last speaker just left off, we oftentimes do the entire side of the house if the siding doesn't match under existing law. Which is one of the reasons I'll talk about more at length later that this bill is simply unnecessary. But I'd like to start by pointing out that this bill is terribly ambiguous. If you look at the language of the bill itself, it's just filled with ambiguities that I believe, on behalf of my company, will interfere with the relationship between the insurer and the insured, one that is a relationship of contract, and insert in the middle of that the party who's doing the work on the house, the contractor who may be doing the siding. It says that if a building or structure has sustained damage, the property casualty insurer shall attempt to match the material in any repair. That's new. Today, it's the party that's doing the contract, the party that's doing the work on the house, the party that's doing the repair that would be out looking for the material to match. It's not your insurer. So we're transferring a burden of locating some item that's used in a repair to the insurer. It continues with, if the material is no longer available in the marketplace. Well, I don't know what that means. Do you? No longer available in which marketplace? Is that within the state? Is that nationwide? Is that worldwide? More questions in this bill than there are answers. The insurer shall match. Does that suggest that I will get to decide as the insurer whether it's an adequate match? I'll tell you that this is something we take very seriously. Every insurance company that sells a homeowner's insurance product has language in the policy of like, kind, and quality. I can't speak for every insurer, but I can tell you that State Farm Insurance, which is owned by its policyholders, takes very seriously the handling of every claim and wants to make sure that our insured is happy with the result. So it isn't the insurer that decides whether it matches. We decide. It's a relationship between you and I, you as my insured, me as the insurer. And if it doesn't, frequently we may do the entire side of the house in order to make it match. I think this bill transfers this obligation and interjects into this relationship between you and I a third party who's going to decide, who the contractor is going to decide whether or not it's a sufficient match in color or texture. And by the way, we consider color and texture when we're settling those claims. That person in this situation is someone who has an interest in how much work is going to be done. Nothing in this bill speaks to the issue of what the remedy is where like, kind, and quality is met, but there's been an addition on the house, and you can't match the siding that was there before. This bill would suggest that you're going to now do the whole house. We call that a wraparound. I think you need to leave this relationship and how these claims are handled to the insured and their insurer. Frankly, I haven't seen any of those folks here complaining. So ask yourself whether this is anecdotal, whether there really is a serious problem out there to fix or not. I suggest to you that there isn't, and that even if there was, there are a multitude of devices, if you will, or precautions within our statutory system under the Division of Insurance rules and laws that protect our insured from instances where a company would be reckless in the way they're handling the resolution of that claim. For example, you can file a complaint with the Department of Insurance, who I know is not here today. So I wonder how important this bill is, how many complaints there really are, whether this is something that needs to be fixed. Because they would certainly have had a lot of complaints about this if it truly were more than an anecdotal situation. You can also take advantage of what are called the unfair trade practices laws in South Dakota that say that an insurer cannot be unfair in the way they handle your claim. There are also what are called market conduct studies. The Division of Insurance has the power, if they feel that an insurance company has been ignoring the provisions of the policy, if they think they have been heavy-handed in the way they're settling any kind of claim, they can file a market conduct study. And I can tell you that a market conduct study is something no insurance company wants to have happen to them. The insurance division has the authority to start looking at every practice that company has, not just how they're handling claims with regard to citing or other things. Finally, there's, of course, bad faith litigation. And I think most of you know what I do the rest of the year. I'm an attorney. So if your insurance company is stormtrooping over your head on a claim like this, give me a call, because they're not entitled to. That relationship is an important contractual relationship. Every company owes you the obligation of good faith. I suggest to you that is an obligation insurance companies in this state take very serious. I think at the beginning of your sessions this year, I took the opportunity to point out that State Farm Insurance Company is a mutual company. We're owned by our policyholders. That's who owns us. We're not traded on the New York Stock Exchange. We're made up of the folks who buy policies from us. So how their claims are handled couldn't be more important to us. Very important to us. Leave this alone, because I can tell you that when we are confronted with a situation where the insured and we are left with something that doesn't match, we look for solutions together. Sometimes it'll be that the house is painted. Let's say your home had been remodeled or was so old that it can't match the siding. Maybe the solution is to put the new siding that doesn't match quite exactly and paint the home. Solutions are found every day in the way claims are settled. I don't think that this piece of legislation is going to further that in any way. In fact, what I do believe it will do is it will create more problems and more interference in that relationship between the insured and insurer right now that I believe works pretty well. So with that, we would urge your resistance of this piece of legislation.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 92?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Commerce Committee. My name is Mike Shaw. I'm an attorney from Pierre, and I'm a registered lobbyist for DeSmit Farm Mutual Insurance Company of South Dakota. And DeSmit Farm Mutual is a domestic farm mutual company in South Dakota, headquartered out of DeSmit. You know, that's the name. We're here today to oppose Senate Bill 92, and we think that Dick Thiessen's remarks on behalf of State Farm are right on the mark. I'll try not to cover those same matters. We believe that this is unnecessary for a couple of reasons. Most policies of insurance contain language that really very clearly sets forth the obligation of the insurer to repair or replace damaged property today. And if I might read to you DeSmit Farm Mutual's policy language, under payment of loss or claim, it says, we may, A, pay the loss in money, or B, rebuild, repair, or replace the property with materials of like kind and quality to the extent practicable. Okay? So they can either pay you in cash or find like materials of like kind and quality to the extent practicable. Now, we think that that latter phrase is important for the reasons that, Mr. Teason expressed. To what extent must the insurer go out and match? I mean, it should be reasonable or practical in terms of their obligation to the insured. Also, it's my understanding from discussions with other companies that there are insurance products out there that take into consideration special components to buildings or homes, such as if you would have concrete shingles, which are quite expensive, or maybe your home has been plastered, which is much more extensive and expensive than drywalling. There are products out there that you can purchase. There's endorsements that you can add to your, to certain policies. I'm told they're called functional equivalence or functional replacement cost endorsements. So in other words, if you're concerned about this, for an added price, you may go out and put an endorsement on your policy that that gives you a higher level of protection or higher coverage. Therefore, you are paying for what you want, and I'm not paying for you, if you understand that. We also are concerned that the passage of this this legislation is going to create ambiguities that are going to lead to unintended consequences. And what I'm talking about is the increase of litigation. Anytime you add language to law that can be interpreted more than one way, it creates the opportunity for argument as to what that means. What is to match? What is similar quality, type, texture, and color? If an insurer meets three of those four, is that reasonable? Or does that give rise to an argument that it's unreasonable and therefore give rise to a lawsuit? If a lawsuit is brought, I think it's really important that, as was mentioned, the Division of Insurance Code has a lot of laws that relate to insurance. One of them, SDCL 58-12-3, says that in any action against an insurance company for failure to pay a loss, the court can award attorney's fees if the refusal was without reasonable cause. Now, I would submit to you that the passage of Senate Bill 92 in conjunction with that statute is a, quite frankly, is a dream for certain plaintiff-oriented attorneys. They're going to bring lawsuits. They're going to allege the failure to match was unreasonable. They're going to allege that the insurance company failed to meet similar quality, type, texture, and color, and that was unreasonable, and therefore they're going to say they're entitled to attorney's fees on top of this. And we don't think that is appropriate, and we don't think that's good for the insurance buying public of the state. With that, I would step aside. Urge you to vote no on Senate Bill 92, and we'll stand by for questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 92?
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Dennis Stunk, and I'm a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Association of Mutual Insurers. Mutual insurers in this state are oftentimes, although Mr. Shaw's client is one of them, mutual insurers are oftentimes very small, locally based mutual insurance companies that are made up of members that are in a particular county or contiguous counties or, in some instances, statewide mutual insurers, but we are the smaller players in this market. However, when you look at this bill, it goes to the heart of what these small insurers insure, and that is the buildings and structures on many farms and ranches in the state of South Dakota. And when you, again, by looking at this bill, I would draw your attention to the fact that this particular bill is not specific to residences where the color, matching materials, and in repairs are perhaps as important as otherwise might be the case. This bill says if a building or structure has sustained damage, that brings into play, if you have a ranch or a farm, a garage, a barn, a hog unit, a hog shed. Now, that doesn't mean hogs shouldn't have a nice place to live, but under the circumstances, it brings into play something other than what perhaps was of great concern to the proponents of this, that being residences where people live, where the aesthetics of that residence probably is more important to them than perhaps a structure out in a farm or a ranch. But in any event, I bring that to your attention to point out that the impact of this bill goes beyond residences. It also takes into effect those other outbuildings and structures that are on farms and ranches, and it significantly would impact the business operations of the farm mutual insurers in the state. You know, the subtle differences that might be come into play here between what the owner of a property and what the insurer says with respect to or sees with respect to the efforts to match this, the color, the quality, the type, the texture of repairs to buildings, I believe really leads to the potential of considerable dispute among the parties. And for those reasons, we oppose this legislation and would ask that you consider the overreaching impact of this legislation and oppose it. Thank you very much. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony?
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Doug Abraham. I'm an attorney and lobbyist from Pierre. Here on behalf of the Property Casualty Insurers Association of America. PCIA is a trade association of over 1,000 member insurance companies. We're here in opposition to Senate Bill 92 as a short summary of the testimony because like kind and quality is a present industry standard. There are products available to anyone who would like to go out and look for them that have a specific situation that they need to insure against, as Mr. Shaw spoke to, those products are available. The present standard of practice, as currently employed, isn't broken. There are substantial safeguards in place under the present law to deal with disputes that may arise under the circumstances and situations that have been alluded to here. This legislation isn't going to solve those problems, and we believe it's going to create more. That's why we'd ask for your support in defeating this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Drew Duncan, an attorney from Sioux Falls and a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Insurance Alliance, which is a trade association of property and casualty insurers doing business in the state of South Dakota and also Allstate. I don't think there's much more to ask or to bring to the conversation. We'd ask you to we'd ask for your support in sending this to the 41st day. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further opponent testimony? Any further opponents? Hearing none, we'll grant Senator Kirkaby a rebuttal.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It is certainly interesting sitting back and listening to the opposition that I believe supports the reason for the passage of this bill. Senate Bill 92 is an attempt to put into writing that equal playing field between that consumer and that insurance company that they negotiate with and do business with. It was already stated that this is standard practice within the industry, there's no reason for the bill. Well, if in fact that is the philosophy and the character of the majority of the insurance companies in South Dakota, why would you not support that and actually acknowledge that in writing? I certainly do take objection to the fact that an agricultural property owner should be treated as a different class of policyholder. I think that's an insult to anybody that owns property that a hog building certainly should not be insured, or to that class or to that level of a residential structure. It is somebody's quality of life, and they have an awful lot of investment into that property. Also, what was testimony, the suggestion that, well, we'll do whatever we can to keep the consumer happy. Well, I would hope so. I think that's what all of our premiums go to, and you work that out in an honorable gentlewoman's agreement to perform on that claim, because you are my business partner. I have been paying you premiums, and you are going to be honorable to what you say you're going to do. So let's put it in writing. Let's be honorable. Let's acknowledge that. There was brief commentary made that, you know, we might even be nice and paint the whole house, paint that whole side of the house. Well, you might think that would be something also easy to put into writing, because if you have two different colors of siding, I think that would be an honorable thing to do. And do you not think that would be negotiated and worked out between that consumer and that casualty coverage? The roots of this certainly is that consumer protection. Any negotiation, any settlement, it is certainly going to be done between that policyholder and that insurance carrier. This bill is drafted certainly not in a, my paraphrasing, an attorney's dream. It's short and sweet. It's crafted after current legislation that's in statute in the great state of Montana. Addresses the heart of the matter that we're trying to do, and that certainly is to protect and cover that consumer. And, Mr. Chairman, I'm also in full disclosure, I'm a proud policyholder of Schmidt Insurance. They do cover my agricultural building on my property north of town. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would certainly stand by, or more particularly refer any comments or questions off to experts that certainly are supporting the passage of Senate Bill 92, but I just can't emphasize enough the heart of this is certainly that very short little bill. We're looking at two sentences, and if it is in fact the standard practice of the insurance industry, why is there opposition to it? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any questions from the committee? Senator Johnston.
I think I'll direct a question to Mr. Teason. Thank you, Mr.
Granted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Teason, one key element of the insurance claim transaction that has not been discussed during all the testimony I've heard, and that's the role of the claims adjuster. And can you give me, from your client's perspective, the relationship, you know, from State Farm, how that is that claim adjuster employee of State Farm? Are they independent? Because in my experience in being a homeowner and a property owner, that claims adjuster plays a significant role in that transaction. Could you just talk similar to that, that relationship?
Mr. Chairman? Sure, and you are correct. In fact, one of the training modes of training for all of our claims people is that they are to treat every claim like it's our insured's only claim. And we believe they do.
I can tell you from the methods or the procedure that's used by State Farm in handling that claim, if there is some issue that arises in terms of like, kind, and quality, that there's some reason why they're having difficulty in matching or getting this done so that it looks just like it did before the damage, that goes to a claims management. So it's then looked by someone else to make sure that that if there's some issue of communication between the insured and the claims person, it's looked at again by someone else in claims management to make sure that whatever the solution is in terms of getting this done is something that's going to make our insured happy with the result. And that's where this is so important, I think, because in that situation or example, if you will, sometimes it will be the collective decision of us and our insured both that something different should be done. I mean, an example comes to my mind of a church that was built in the late 1800s or early 1900s. It's brick. You can't find that brick anymore. Something I didn't know happened as much as it does, but I'm fortunate enough to have built a building in the half a block from here. It was only built in the late 90s, and already I can't replace that brick. So it does happen, particularly when you have something that's that old. Well, do you rebuild the whole church because you can't match that brick and spend $1 million on rebuilding it or not? You find solutions with your insured through that process. You know, I would add that I think our agents, like insurance agents around the country, whether they're a captive agent like a State Farm agent or whether they're an independent agent, those folks take seriously the need to keep their insureds happy. And my experience is that the agents are even involved oftentimes in this picture to make sure that if there is for some reason an issue of that sort, that they find solutions. They want those folks to come back. They want those folks to continue being their client. They have very much a vested interest in getting that right. And I think the fact that you don't see a whole bunch of people in here saying this has been a problem is evidence of that.
Follow up to that? Senator?
Senator Maher. Mr. Cheeseman, question and answer or whatever, in the testimony, we heard about Montana. Can you allude to the Montana law and what's going on? Has the world come to a screeching halt in Montana?
And excuse me, the chair is going to ask for a question. For those of you in the audience, chair has been looking through the state statutes of Montana trying to find this law. If anyone knows the exact statute, I would like to be able to look at that during this testimony. So if anyone knows it, let me know. I can't find it in a search. So thank you. Do you remember the question?
And, yes.
Okay.
I am not familiar with Montana's law. I think the statement is that it was crafted after Montana's law, not that it was exactly like Montana's law. A company like State Farm that does business in all of the states tries to craft language in its policies that will be usable in more than one state. So every time we tweak something or make a change to language, it creates issues for all insurers about whether or not their policies have to be changed. It's why you see language that is kind of an industry standard. And it's used across the company and in policies that are used in many states. And like, kind, and quality has been that standard for many, many years. That's why I said in my testimony that while the policies speak of like, kind, and quality, and I think Mr. Shaw actually read some of their language, and that's exactly the language you heard, companies still look beyond that when they're settling the claims. So they're still looking at texture and color and things like that. It's not just those words, but those have been the words that have been the standard for years. This bill would change that.
Senator Bogalka.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Me?
Yeah. Okay. I've got a follow-up to Senator Johnson's question. I may, I didn't really hear a straight answer to his question about whether or not the guy comes out to look at the claim is actually an employee of your company or not, and this claims manager. Are they both employees of State Farm, would they be?
In State Farm's situation, that claims person would be a State Farm employee.
Okay.
Some companies, I couldn't list who, but some companies use independent agents, GAB, other, there are agents, agencies out there, I'm sorry, I said agents, there are claims agents out there that are in the business of adjusting claims, and some companies use those folks to come out and look at the claim and propose adjustment. But that person is just relaying information then, I think, to your company, and your conversation still would need to be through you and your company. I think that agent would refer you on to the company if there are difficulties. So some, you know, my company, I can only speak to my company, and we use our own agent.
Thank you. Follow up to that? Any further questions from the committee? The chair will ask a general question. Has anyone found that Montana statute? Or
Mr. Chairman, again, Dwight Newharth with South Dakota Home Builders Association. In our year-long research, we actually met with the Division of Insurance, and they helped us find other things around the country that spoke to this. And in Montana, it was a judicial review, something in their courts that we patterned this after. Every state is different. A lot of states give wide latitude to their divisions of insurance for rulemaking. In South Dakota, the rulemaking power in our division of insurance is very limited. They just don't have a lot of rulemaking authority. There are states that they do this all by rule, and sometimes it's by judicial, sometimes it's by statute. So if you're looking in the Montana statutes, you're not going to find it there. It was a judicial review.
Thank you, but I also, I did do a search through Montana court law, too, and I'm not finding those keywords. So the chair is in question as to what sort of keywords. I mean, the chair is trying to find if this is, as claimed, to be patterned after something already in place. We need to know that this is the wording in this law, because the opposition is saying that the wording in this law is a little too vague or might cause unintended consequences. We need to know that if you're basing it off of Montana and claiming that Montana as proof of this is good legislation, we need to know that this is similar wording.
Sure, I understand, Chairman. I do have the hard copy in my office. I don't have it with me at the Capitol here today, but I do have the hard copy that was forwarded through our division of insurance that helped us research this. So I can provide that to you after the meeting.
And for clarification, the chair is not accusing you of not doing it. It's just I can't find it, and it would have been nice to have it during this committee hearing, quite honestly. Any further questions from the committee? Chair will actually ask a question for one of the proponents. The opposition is claiming that is this just an anecdotal problem? Where are the policyholders that are hurt by this? Can you give us any idea of the scope?
Thank you, Chairman. Again, Dwight Newhouse, South Dakota Home Builders Association. Oftentimes, the complaints come to the builder. Once a consumer has called the builder to come out and the builder's finding that the insurance company, sometimes they're the person that's actually negotiating with the insurance company, and that's where the complaint then comes. And yes, we have instances all the time. You know, it's not just once a year or twice a year that it happens around the state. It's pretty continually. I have one builder in Yankton that has a phone conversation on his phone recorded from an insurance company just flat out saying there's nothing on the books in South Dakota. I'm not obligated to give you similar quality. And, you know, if need be, we could find that builder and get his taped recorded message that flat out says, yes, there's a problem. And we don't support the bill just because we think that there should be something, you know, additional on the books. You know, I realize that legislators are reluctant to put things on the books when it's not necessary. But we really feel this bill is necessary, and it is something that's giving protection to our consumers in South Dakota.
The chair will just say for the committee members, feel free, as far as that phone conversation from the man in Yankton, you can, not to say anything right or wrong, but you can take it or leave it, because there is no proof of that right now. But we don't want not to believe you. It's just we'll leave it up to the committee members' discretion on that. We are still on questions from the committee. Hearing none, we'll move to committee discussion and or action.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for saving us there, Senator Maher.
I'm just letting a moment of suspense hang in the air. Motion 41st day.
Motion of moving Senate Bill 92 to the 41st day is moved by Senator Maher. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Lederman. For those here, motion to the 41st day, there is no 41st day of the South Dakota legislature, so it is essentially removing the bill from further consideration. All those in favor will say aye, opposed, nay. Secretary, is there any discussion on this? I actually do want to open this up for discussion.
I think we've belabored this point long enough.
Thank you, Senator Maher. Anyone else? Thank you. Secretary, please call the roll. The motion is moving Senate Bill 92 to the 41st day. All those in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
No.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
5 yes, 1 no, 1 absent.
Motion is 5 in favor. 1 opposed to moving Senate Bill 92 to the 41st day. The chair would like to say that I do believe this bill has merit. I just don't think that the testimony was adequate today. So feel free to bring it back next year. They've already left, so apparently they don't want to hear it. But thank you very much, committee members. With that, just want to remind everyone to leave their binders, and the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn. Moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed, nay. Meeting is adjourned.